When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Now it's Culinary Corner time now, and I'm delighted to welcome back, how we were just saying, like an old friend, because Emma Kay has been on the show 10 times in 10 years. Welcome back, Emma.
I'm amazed you keep having me back, actually, but it's an absolute pleasure. It really is. I can't believe it's that long.
I can't. I was only 21 at the time.
Yeah, well, I'm me too.
Of course we were. So this latest one is called... What is it? Warts and all, or warts and all? Warts and all.
Warts and all. Yeah, it's kind of a pun, a play on words for, you know, warts and all. Because warts in the medieval period just meant sort of herbs, basically cooking herbs and things like that. So I thought it was quite a good, fun title.
It's a very fun title. So the full title is Warts and All: Medieval Cooking. So, as always with your books, there are some recipes in there, but it's also a bit of history to discover what people were cooking and how they cooked it.
Yeah, basically. I mean, it's a big period to cover, you know, the medieval period. So, I sort of tried to keep it as simple as possible and sort of break it down into, you know, sort of different categories, looking at the early medieval, mid, and then the late medieval, because it's, you know, it is kind of like, well, it's a long time. It's from sort of the end of the Romans, you know, right up until sort of 15, 1600s.
Yeah. And I imagine... during those times, it would be sort of a paleo diet, sort of meat and probably some vegetables. Is that right?
Yeah, well, it was a whole mix of things, really. The poor people, you know, if you were, you know, the poorer people wouldn't have eaten much meat, to be honest, like a few scraps here and there. But yeah, if you were wealthy, you would have been consuming an awful lot of meat and fish. You know, there was, I think we forget just how much fish people were eating then, you know, like dolphins and porpoise and seal. And, you know, there's lots of archaeological evidence to show that there were those kind of big fisheries set up to eat those types of aquatic animals. So yeah,
would they have had wines back then, or would it have been things like mead?
Oh yeah, definitely wine and mead. So the Anglo-Saxons and Vikings kind of introduced sort of new drinks like mead and new different types of fermenting and ales and things. But wine, we've had wine for a long time, you know, since anyone could grow a vine, really. And I think people forget that, particularly in the UK, you know, the Romans introduced wine, and then that was kind of carried on after. The Anglo-Saxons didn't seem they did drink wine, but I don't think they cultivated it in the same way as the Romans did. But then by the medieval era, yeah, we were drinking a lot of wine, yeah.
And would they have had bread back then?
Yes, lots of different types of bread. So before the Romans, we would have been eating bread made from sort of ground down, you know, kind of peas and beans and that sort of flour. But then they introduced sort of new flours. And if you were lucky enough, you'd have like the new sort of wheat flours that the Romans kind of introduced. Or if you were poorer, then you would be eating sort of barley and oat based flours. But they had like really sort of expensive, fine floured breads for the rich, like they were called wastel breads or manchet breads. And they were, you know, really kind of high caliber sort of breads. But then the lower classes, or, you know, the poorer people would have eaten very coarse breads. made of, you know, cheaper grains.
Yeah, of course, of course. And as I'm sure you remember, I always ask about desserts. What sort of desserts would they have had?
Yeah, well, I think people forget that, you know, by kind of the 11th century, definitely, well, across Europe and the rest of the world, really, we had sugar. So, and sugar was something that was, you know, eaten by the wealthy in abundance. And it'd be sort of, in a medieval period, it would kind of show your status. So the sweeter the dishes you had, and the more you could offer on the table, the better, really.
And you've managed to source recipes. How you do this, I don't know, but you've managed to source recipes from Anglo-Saxon times and other places like Middle East and Scandinavian. So you've sort of gone all over the world.
Yeah, well, I think that there's kind of a bit of a misconception that there is no kind of information before, you know, the sort of 1600s or whatever. But there are lots of manuscripts that were written, particularly when you look back at the Anglo-Saxon period. There was they're called leechdoms. So they weren't really recipe books, but they were kind of written down records of what people were using to as things to cure themselves with. So what they ate as ways of medicine and things like that. But it tells us a lot about how people cooked and what they ate. And then we have all kinds of different manuscripts that exist that were written down by the church. You know, cathedrals can have collections that go, you know, right back to sort of the 13, 1400s that specifically do list recipes. So the monasteries were collecting a lot of recipes as well. So there are, and of course, the Middle East were writing cookery books. Well, the first kind of Middle Eastern cookery book was as early as the 900s. And even though people weren't literate, the very wealthy and the sort of clerical and people high up in society were. And so they would collect these manuscripts and books, and they would use them, and they would use them for cooking. So So we are quite lucky with the wealth of information that is there. It is patchy, but you can put it together. And of course, the Scandinavians, you know, when you look at the Vikings and the Anglo-Saxons, well, they had a lot of sagas and stories and tales, and they mention food a lot in those sagas. So we can get a lot about what they were eating and what they brought, you know, to, well, not just to the UK, but the rest of Europe and the world as well.
Yeah, for sure. Would it have been quite bland food, though? Would they have had, I mean, I know, as you say, it's a massive period, so maybe it changed over time, but would they have had spices or sauces and things?
Lots of spices. Again, it was, you know, if you were wealthy, you would have spices, you would have sauces. They were making many, many different types of sauces then, and they were incorporating, like, vinegar was a big thing, so they would use vinegar in sauces, mix them with peppercorns and mustard seeds. And, you know, they were exporting and trading spices and, you know, and exotic foods from all over the world, really, then. We had kind of access to a lot of luxury products. And we because there were so many different influences going on in the world then, so you had the Scandinavians, you had the Germans, you had the rise of Islam, of course, you had, so there were the Crusades, and you had the Normans. So everyone was kind of sharing and coming together with food. And that's why there's a real rich mix of all kinds of things going on then.
And as far as cooking is concerned, would they have literally sort of cooked as we imagine on a cauldron over fire? Did it go on like that?
That was the very basic way. So you would have like a fire with lots of different pots and pans doing different things on the fireplace. But as you get later on into the, later in the medieval period, when you're sort of looking at 14, 1500s, they would have had sort of makeshift kitchens in big houses, you know, and in the royal palaces and things. And they would have just been like a similar thing, but using sort of spits and roasting spits and things like that. So yeah, it was still all pretty basic, and a lot of food was, you know, they fermented food underground as well, and that was a big thing that we got from the Scandinavians. And they smoked a lot of food, of course, another thing that we got from the Anglo-Saxons, you know, and the Vikings.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Now, there are, as well as the history, there are some recipes in the book, one of them being lemon and ginger posse. What is a lemon and ginger posse?
It's a possette.
Oh, it's a possette. You know, possette. I knew she'd missed a letter off. I knew it. You should have told me that off air. I said to you, is it a posse? Naughty Emma. A possette.
I do prefer posse. That sounds...
It does, doesn't it? It sounds like lots of...
Yeah, it just sounds like
fun.
But yeah, the possette has like a really long history, actually. It was sort of originally... something that was sort of hot milk and curds that was used as a poultice for wounds. And then it sort of gradually became, they thought, well, this is good and this is quite effective. Why don't we actually eat it? So they drank it. So they made it as a remedy for colds. And then it sort of later became a dessert. And you sort of get these first recipes for it being as a dessert as early as sort of 1400s. And there's a manuscript actually from Holcombe Hall in Norfolk, where and they've got in their collection. There's a recipe in there.
Oh, we're losing you, Emma. You seem to have gone quiet.
Oh, sorry.
That's better.
Hello,
that's
can you
better.
Hear me?
Yeah, you're there again now. Yeah.
So one of the earliest recipes in the 15th century was basically just cow's milk with wine, and then it was sort of boiled up, and then they added ginger to it.
Okay.
And that was kind of... So, and then if you think about our... Do you know what a syllabub is? You probably
know
what a syllabub is.
Sort
that more sort of solid kind of dessert. It's kind of like an early version of that, really. Okay. And so I've got a recipe in the book, which I sort of decided that I would, you know, try and make it sort of more modern and make a more modern posset.
Okay.
And so that's what I've included in the book. So it's basically just, you know, it's just cream with spices. But they did love kind of curdled desserts then. So, you know, again, that's another throwback from, you know, the Vikings and the Anglo-Saxons, and because they used a lot of milky sort of puddings, you know, and early blancmanges and things like that. They go way, way back to the 13, 1400s. So this posset is just kind of and they did a version of that. And then they had, as you get into the kind of 16th century, they started manufacturing these special pots called posset pots, where you would, you know, you would be able to eat the posset and then suck it out through a little spout. So suck what was left down below through a spout, so that they got the whole thing. So they got the curds and all then the juicy bits at the bottom as well.
Wow, history is so fascinating. Well, if our listeners want to find out more about the book, it's called Warts and All, Medieval Cooking, and it's by Emma Kay, who we're chatting to now. And as always, we're selling it on our website, tre.radio. Emma, I know you've obviously written lots of books because we've interviewed you lots of times. What's the best way for people to find out more about you?
At the moment, I'm focusing on my collection. So I have a big culinary collection of items of Kitchenalia. And I have a new website where I'm kind of showcasing that collection and showcasing what I do and what I've done with food history and all the rest of it. And it's museumofkitchenalia.co.uk.
Museumofkitchenalia.co.uk. Lovely. Emma, we'll no doubt chat again soon. You take care for now.
Oh, thank you, Selena. So good to talk to you.
Always a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.